poor Pharaoh, poor Pharaoh. He had no idea. He thought his word was law. He thought he could get whatever he wanted just because he sat on the throne, because he had a budget, because he had an army to back him up. He thought because he was at the head of a system, he could run everything and do anything that he liked. But he was defied by the weakest of the weak. I mean, first he thought he could work the people into oblivion. I mean, genocide by labor didn't quite work out for him, because the more they worked, the more they multiplied. And so he decides to make a decree to say that every baby boy should be thrown in the river. And the women who helped the Hebrew women give birth, refused to do so. They didn't throw the boys into the river. And so he summoned them and asked in his booming Pharaoh voice, "What are you guys doing? What's going on?" And the women said, "Ah, well, you know, as soon as we get there, the boys are born," which wasn't true. But God blessed those midwives and their families, and they expanded and they multiplied and they grew. And then a short while later, another mother hid her baby boy. And when she couldn't hide him in the house anymore, she made a little ark and put it on the river to hide him. And what do you know? A young girl named Miriam, his sister, watched over his ark that was floating in the waters of the Nile, in the very river that Pharaoh revered as a deity. And who should come to bath in the river to worship the river, but his own daughter. And his own daughter brought a Hebrew boy of 12 into Pharaoh's very own house, in the very house where Pharaoh was planning to get rid of Hebrews. He had a Hebrew apprentice come in and to take over his throne after he was gone. And all of this was facilitated by women, people who had no status at all in the land of Egypt, who were lower than men, were the ones whom God used to defy Pharaoh's order. You know, Paul elsewhere in his writing says that God has used the little things to confound the wise. God supplants our big evil projects with little good things that we tend to overlook. And that's just the thing about the way God works. So often we want God to work with fanfare, with fireworks and loud blaring trumpets. And there are times when he's done that in the Bible. There are times when he does that in our lives. But quite often, God likes to work behind the scenes. God likes to work in little things and multiply. It's as if God doesn't really want the limelight. It's as if God doesn't really have a social media account. Not to say there's anything wrong with them, but God's way of doing things tends to be in the background. He likes to work behind the scenes. And that's something we have to look out for, because in Revelation 13, as the dragon is carrying out his war against Michael, he calls up a proxy from the land, and that proxy has magical powers, magical tricks, and it uses those magical tricks to deceive people. You know, if your experience with God demands a constant display of miracles, then you've missed Jesus' reaction to the second temptation of the devil. Because in the second temptation in Matthew chapter 4, Satan took him to church and he told him to be irresponsible, to live as if life had no consequences, to perform a magic trick. And that's the difference, though, between miracles and magic, because miracles are when we trust God to do for us what we can't do for ourselves. They're when we trust God to take care of our hopes and dreams that we've put in a little ark and floated down the river and hope that he would step in and do what needs to be done. But magic is when we trust, instead of trusting in God, we trust in what we think is our ability to manipulate him. And so it is that just like what Satan did with Jesus. A lot of us go to church so we can be irresponsible. And this opens us up to a lot of deception. And you can see this in Revelation 13, because the beast from the land, I like to call it the land mutant performs miracles to try to trick people to seem as if it's coming from God. It's like a lot of people today. In the first section, in the first part of this trilogy, I mentioned the beast from the sea, which is institutionalized sin, which is the power of the institution. There's some people who go around saying, you know, I believe this because my church says so. But what if the church is wrong? What if the institution is wrong? And then there are other people who are on the other side who say, ah, you know what, I'm not like one of these stooges who go around believing everything they're told at church just because some institution says something is true. I believe my pastor is telling the truth because he prayed for me and a miracle happened. I got married, I got a job, I got a child. And this is the other hand, it's the left hand of deception. If the other side is the right hand, it's both the same source of deception that says you believe something is true because I've performed a miracle. But that isn't true, although the Bible itself gives us evidence that no, this isn't true. And the fireworks and pizzazz and trumpets aren't the usual way God works. God prefers to walk in silent ways. He prefers partnership with us where we do our part and he does his. You can even see it in the way Jesus behaved when he resurrected Lazarus. He told the people to roll the stone away from the cave. He could have told the stone to do so and it would have obeyed in a hurry. But that was something the people could do for themselves. And what he did for them, what they couldn't do. And that was to raise Lazarus from the dead. And that is the way God works with us today. There are things that are within our power to do. And God has empowered us. The miracle that he has performed is that he has empowered us to do so much for ourselves. But then he walks with us so that he can do for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. And that just makes God look so lacquer, man. It makes him much better because it's unlike Pharaoh, he isn't overbearing and trying to push us into a corner to choose him. But he respects our freedom. He respects our choices. To put it this way, the more reasons you have for doing something, the less freedom you have in choosing it. The less freedom in choice you have. Freedom of choice you have, rather. And so God leaves room for doubt. If you want to doubt him like Pharaoh did in the book of Exodus, God leaves enough room for that because belief is a choice. You can't have a relationship unless you choose to trust. And so he leaves space for us to choose to trust him. And when we do, he's always eager to work with us. So I don't know what you're facing in your life as you deal with systemic sin and all the troubles that it's brought upon us. And instead of sitting around twiddling your thumbs, waiting for God to perform a miracle, why don't you do what he has given you to do? Why don't you do what's right in front of you? Do what you can to get with God's agenda. And then you'll find that he is always eager to work with you to do what you can't do for yourself.